And I want to welcome you to Crossover here on WRTI. Marvin Hamlisch, you are quite an incredible person. I really don't even know where to start with you. Maybe I should start with a little bit about what you are. You are composer and songwriter, according to all of the information that one looks up. I think that's all kind of the same thing. But tell us a little bit about how you got started when you were first composing. How did that happen?
Well, my father was a musician. There was a piano in the house, and I started playing the piano. And one thing led to another, and I had a very good ear, and I was accepted at a very young age at the Juilliard School of Music, and surrounded by other whiz kids of the piano.
Right.
And again, around the age of 8 or 9, I realized that I was never going to be the next Horowitz.
Mm-hmm.
But what I loved doing was writing music. That's what I seemed to really kind of enjoy. And I decided to go into that because it was like something I felt I could do. And that's how it all began.
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, composition, classical, any kind of music, because you are multi-talented. I mean, you do songs, but you also do film scores, and it's a kind of a
right.
different, a little, it's quite a different approach.
Totally.
Yeah. So it's kind of presumptuous to try to analyze the creative process, but certainly for let's say with songs, do you start, say, with the lyric, if there is a lyric, or do you
right.
kind of?
I like to start usually with an idea or a title, something that kind of strikes my fancy. When I was younger and I would just be writing tunes, as I got older, I started being commissioned to write songs. And what's nice about that is then you know what the project is. So part of the idea is already out there. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You know, if you're doing a movie
right.
or you're doing a song for a movie or whatever, but the idea starts in your head because you've already seen the movie. But yes, having some sort of an idea of a lyric or of a title is, for me, the best way to begin.
Well, certainly with the Bergmans, I mean, that's was that first? Were the lyrics for The Way We Were first?
Well, the beauty of The Way We Were was that the title was there already. The
yes.
title was actually written by Arthur Lawrence, who wrote the book.
Yes.
And it's a great title. You don't live your life and get that many great titles. That's a truly great one that came down the pipeline. And something like that is a once-in-a-lifetime, but worth every penny, because it's such a great title, you start writing immediately.
But I guess rhythmically, you follow the words. But I mean, in terms of the whole perspective of what the story is about, it's very
well,
nostalgic.
You don't really follow the words, because the words, I actually wrote the music for that first.
Really?
I've seen the movie. I knew the flavor of the movie, which was very bittersweet. I knew that I wanted to leave room for a title called The Way We Were. And that's how that song began. It began with me sitting at the piano and beginning writing the music. And then I wrote the music, sent it out to the Bergmans, but the song turned out to be very long. It turned out to be longer than we thought.
Okay.
And we had to start to cut it down a bit. But yeah, that was music first. It was really title first, then music, then lyrics.
It's one of the greatest songs that was ever written, in terms of certainly popularity and on every level. I mean, it's artistically moving, and of course does carry through so much of the movie. I think that as you know, as a musician, you can really create an aura with a probably static scene if you have the right music. But so now you also, I mean, that, of course, that was the great hit, and of course Barbara Streisand made it fantastic, and you have probably won every conceivable award that you possibly can with The Sting. Now The Entertainer is by Scott Joplin. So what did you do? Did you write around that?
With the Sting, the director of the movie loved the music of Scott Joplin and asked me to go to the library, music library, and actually pick out lots of different music by Scott Joplin, which I did, and see what would work with the movie. And then what I did was basically adapt it, meaning not so much writing stuff as it was making sure it would fit. So let's say, for instance, you have a scene that's 55 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
He has a composition that's 2 minutes 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I got to take his composition and get it down to 55 seconds. Which is just a question of, in a way, what a tailor does when they give them a suit or a dress fix, and you're just going to, you know, take it in here, stretch it out there, you know, pinch a little here, whatever. And that's what adaptation is all about. It just means you take the thing that you have and you make it directly to the film. And that's what I really did.
Well, that's kind of like doing a spot, a commercial or something. I mean, that's another thing.
Right.
You're just
literally making sure that it will fit. You're just making sure it fits the exactly on. And it's more or less a question more of timing than it is of anything else. But you want to make something sound still musical. You don't want to just cut it and have it sound lousy. You want to make it sound as if it was inevitably going to be that amount of time.
But essentially, that's a whole different thing than starting with your own music.
Right, totally different.
I mean,
totally different.
You're an expert in doing that. But again, you have this whole other side, which is creative, in terms of your own creativity. And and what is the difference between writing for theater and film? I mean, you really cross the line, you know.
But film music is background music. Film music, you are there to do the job of helping the film, supporting the film. You're the background music. It's very rare for someone who runs the theater saying, I must see this because so-and-so wrote the score for it.
Mm-hmm.
You write the music and you are there to support the film. Now, with a musical, it's a Rodgers and Hammerstein. It's a Steve Sondheim show. It is about forefront music. So you get a chance to really tell the story through the music and the lyrics. So it's a totally different way of writing. One is background, one is foreground.
And that chorus line is brilliant, just brilliant. I mean,
well, that's my little baby, and I'm very, very proud of
chorus
line.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, the tempo, the beat, the whole pacing of everything is just, it's brilliant. And of course, you've been told that many times over, but you are so versatile. I mean, you're wearing a lot of hats in what you do.
Yeah, we got a lot of hats. Absolutely true. And I the way I always put it, I always say that you should think of my brain as like a tape recorder that we put different cassettes in with the rules. So when I'm writing a rock and roll tune, I put that cassette in. I'm writing it for a movie, I put in that cassette. It has all the rules of the game.
Well, I was just going to ask you that. Of course, that's style. I mean, arranging and so on. But then there's the creative, I mean, the actual melody and the progression of the music. Have you been affected by the musical styles? I mean, music has changed so radically in the years you've been writing.
It has changed a lot. And, you know, Broadway right now has become much more of a rock and roll industry than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame as far as I'm concerned, because I tend to be a purist, but I try to stay up with the times. Of course, a lot depends on the product or the project that you pick and when the project takes place. I know that times, they are a-changing.
Well, but of course, I guess that's the story of music, isn't it? I mean, you know, you start with Bach and you get up to Ravel.
So powerful because it speaks to our generation, you know, which is the best thing you can say about an art form.
So where are you now, musically?
Where am I now?
What cassette's in your brain now?
Well, I'm going to be starting to write a musical for a film that I'm looking forward to. And that's going to be in a wide range of genre, and so I'm doing that. And I'm hoping to write a musical, but musicals take forever because you have to wait for the book writer to write the book, and that you never know how long that is. But that's what takes the time.
Well, do you have a story in mind when you start?
Oh yeah,
in your brain, and then you get the writer. Does it work that way ever?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You do. You do have a story.
First, the story is based on a true incident that occurred, and then you try to get the writer to flesh it out. Right. And that's what I'm waiting for now. That's what I'm in the process now, which is we have the writer, we just have to wait for him to write it.
Oh, so you've already chosen the writer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then, well, that's it's all the creative process. But if you speak to a writer, I guess you have to tell him what you have in mind to start with. Isn't that right?
I think you talk about what you have in mind, but then you also want to leave enough room for him to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's good to strap somebody into and say, you got to do this, otherwise, the heck with you. It doesn't work like that. I think what you do is you tell him what you think, and then say, and now you're on your own, see what you come up with, you know, and see what happens.
Well, of course, now you are also, you do conducting as well, I mean, in terms
right.
of the...
That's what got me. I'm actually right now in Washington, D.C., where I'm conducting the Christmas show for the National Symphony Orchestra. So we have three more performances of that coming up.
Now,
so there's a lot of music that I do. I sometimes think of myself as a person who's on a highway, a different highway, you know, with about four or five lanes.
Yes.
And I'm constantly changing lanes. I'm going from the conducting lane to the composing lane, to the musical lane to the movie lane to the whatever lane.
But
know?
it's very exciting and it's challenging and I guess it's all creative. I mean, there's it's a challenge
right.
to you to change the lane and then come up with the answer. I guess
you got it exactly. That's
yeah.
Exactly what I do.
Now, one great question. What is the Great American Songbook? This is a thing that has become, it's irritating me because that's all I hear
right.
about. And what it is I would always think of kind of Gershwin or even before Gershwin, maybe.
That's exactly what it is. What happened is all of a sudden, and I think it came out of the fact that a lot of rock and roll artists, as they got older, right,
mm-hmm.
had to reinvent themselves. They had to stick around and they couldn't shake it anymore. But they had really good voices, and they decided to take songs from Cole Porter,
mm-hmm.
Irving Berlin, Harold Arlen, that gang,
yes.
and do it their way. And that needed a name. Those songs needed a name. You know, what are we going to call the bulk of the material that is, in fact, what you hear at a wedding? You know, what are we going to call the things that were written from 1920 through about 1960? That are really the standards of America, the things that, you know...
The master faith book, right?
yeah, the ultimate faith book. It's the thing that everybody plays, whether you're here
yeah,
or you're in China or you're
right,
in Cleveland.
Right, right.
And somebody, and I don't know who it was, but somebody coined that, the American...
The Great songbook. American Songbook.
Right. Somebody came up with that title, and it stuck.
Was Al Jolson you know? Involved in that? Did it go back that far?
I don't think it goes back quite that far. I think it goes more back after the in the late 30s when you really started having the
Cole
Porters
and
the Irving Berlin mm-hmm. and you know those guys and Richard Rodgers and Gershwin of course and of course they added to a degree some songs of Bacharach and stuff like that you know that are really standards you know
yes of course.
I mean, my feeling is simply this. In the year 5000, at some wedding, they're still going to be playing My Funny Valentine.
That's right.
You know, that's
we hope.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? I mean, it's really wonderful. But you are still of a certain vintage here. Are you changing? I know you're going to adapt, but you still are. You're a romantic, I think.
Yes.
You know.
No, I can't change that. I can't change that.
Don't.
Write what I don't feel.
Yeah.
But I'm very much a person who's obsessed with melody. I believe in melody. So that's what I try to do.
So when you actually started to write, I mean, were you at school? I mean, what were you doing once you realized you weren't going to be another Horowitz and you started to compose?
I stayed at the Juilliard School of Music.
Yes.
To learn to play the piano. But yes, I started to write, and I was actually at a place called the Professional Children's School, which was a junior high and high school for professional kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we put on a show every year.
Yes.
Excuse me. And in that show, I got a chance to start writing new songs. And that's how I started to hone my craft.
So now you are conducting several orchestras. Is that just as a pops conductor? Is that what
right.
it is, your music?
This is just as a pops conductor, right.
How do you like standing on the podium and having the orchestra at your feet waiting for your every move?
it's fun. It's not something that I chose wildly to do. It wasn't in my dream list, but it's fun to do. I enjoy it. I probably won't be doing as much of it as I have, but I've had a very good run on it. Yeah.
Now the future for you is then this it's a musical that you're writing. Is that what it is?
Right. One is for the movies and one is for the stage. That's what I'm looking for now.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm so thrilled that we had a few minutes to speak with you. You're very approachable. You're very direct. You're very natural. It's really refreshing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was delightful.
A pleasure. Thanks, Norman.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.